At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello and welcome to a Part of Cthulhu behind the bar once again with the two creators of Blister Critters. Would you like to introduce yourselves?
Sure. I'm Tony. I am, I guess, the creator of Blister Critters. I'm a partially full-time tabletop illustrator. I've convinced enough people that I can make games to where I can make a little bit of money doing it. I started up Blister Critters as like a morning sketch sometime last year, and then I pitched it to Wythe of the Stillfleet Studio, and they're helping me bring it to life. They've been super, super cool, and yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Hey, I'm Wythe, and yeah, it's great to work with you, Tony. I am a writer and game designer of a company called the Stillfleet Studio, which I started a couple years ago with some friends and my wife. And we actually hired Tony to work on the flagship game Stillfleet, which is my sort of sci-fi RPG I've been working on for a long time. And we have a system that I've been working on for a long time for Stillfleet called the Grit System. Your scores are dice, you burn a resource called Grit and kind of gamble with it. And, you know, we really liked working with Tony, and Tony thought he had a great idea for a game and wanted to use our system. And so we're very, very lucky to be able to sort of publish and help bring to life Blister Critters, which is just a really fun game. I really think it is a really very playable and replayable experience of pretending to be, you know, a cartoon animal.
Nice. Fair play. And of course, I've got Jay here, my co-host, as usual.
Hey, hello, everybody.
So, let's kick it off with the very first icebreaker we ask everyone, and to the both of you. If you could say a pint of Cthulhu was any drink, what drink would you say it was?
Fernet Branca, which I really like, but I've found many people don't like.
Never heard of that before.
I really like really, really herbal aperitifs, like digestifs, things that just taste like plants.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I don't know any of those words. I would say that it is a cup of mud, which is like ice cream and gummy worms and Oreos all crushed up.
That sounds better than I thought it was going to. Jay, do you want to start us off with the first actual question?
Sure thing, Matt. So, this is to both of you, I guess. What's your history of TTRPGs? You already said that you've made a few.
Why?
Sure. I mean, you know, how long do you have? I mean, I'm 40. I've been like forever GM since I was 12, and I've been writing my own worlds the whole time. I went back to my childhood home, cleaning up elderly parents and stuff, and it's crazy to see like really bad lists of NPCs and stuff from when I was a kid. But more recently, more interestingly, yeah, I mean, in the last decade, I've really moved away from D20 games, and although I love Powered by the Apocalypse and other kind of OSR games that really kind of blew my mind and helped me think differently about games, I made up my own system eventually. So the recent history is, yeah, I have this new system and have made a bunch of games with it that are fun. Mostly, I like sci-fi a lot, so I've run a lot of fantasy games with it as well, and we have some fantasy versions coming out, but mostly I've been running this big, epic, super future sort of political sci-fi game, which is actually very silly and zany at the same time. I mean, you're workers, you work for a giant evil space company, you're sort of complicit, the company's kind of the bad guy, but also it's kind of all you know. You're still kind of heroic, you know, space mercenary types. So it's a nice blend of genres, and people seem to think, you know, it's fun to play, right? The narrative structure is fun. But yeah, my history has been mostly as a writer, GM, and game designer, and that is how I met Tony, who is an artist. We work with a few artists, but I really, really like Tony's art. It's very different, and it was really fun, even with a sci-fi game, talking about how to represent sort of bizarre concepts, and Tony's very fast and good at stuff like that. So, Tony, you should talk about Blister Critters more, but I could say lots of things about Blister Critters, but I definitely think, you know, Tony, you're the creator, so.
I have a much shorter history with tabletop games. A couple years back, I fell into doing like a choose your own adventure style thing on Instagram, where people would like comment and we'd move like through like a fantasy world. Through that, I fell into doing more like tabletop commission work. And then I actually ran my first Kickstarter for like a system neutral, like god corpse crawl called Amu last year. And I realized I actually enjoy making the games that I've been doing all this artwork for. So I am primarily an illustrator. Secondarily, I make games, so I have stuff to illustrate for. But I do genuinely enjoy the games crafting, and it's been really, really cool to have a project grow much larger. Blister Critters was supposed to be a zine, like 50 pages max, and now we're really trying to keep it to 100 pages. We have a full deluxe box with somewhat like 50 cards and this big poster, and it's ballooned into a really, really cool and fun project to work on that I'm excited to talk about today.
Cool. I will say I backed at that level as well, just because the art style alone looks incredible. Speaking of the art, you both say how you have experience with artistic works. What kind of things have you been working on previous to this, and what led up to this?
The largest thing prior to this was Amu and Eldritch Extermination. You go through the corpse of a dead god and you bring him along with you to figure out kind of what's infesting his body and his corpse. Prior to that, I kind of bounce around. Right now I'm working on a bunch of like Morkborgy type stuff, so that kind of fills that niche of wanting to do like heavy metal artwork. And then I get to work on Blister Critters, which is cartoon like rabbits and frogs bouncing around. Prior to that, it's all been the same vein, I guess, visually. Far back in the past, I used to do a bunch of like band t-shirts and album artwork.
I'd be writing something similar somehow if I didn't play games. It's hard to imagine what that would be, because I love TTRPGs. I find them just more fun than other kinds of games and other most other like hobby type activities. Not to diss anyone else's, that's just like where my brain goes. But I love hip hop, and I do artistically I sketch like really vague alien plants for fun and stuff, but my art is basically writing. So, you know, I write fiction, and it was sort of started there in terms of professional writing, that, you know, that and just science communication, you know, writing about the future from a more technical kind of standpoint. I'm trained as an anthropologist, and so a lot of my day job has been writing about first medicine and then food, sort of the future of the life science technologies that businesses care about. And while that may seem removed from RPGs, I mean, it gives me things to think about like our world and our lived experience and like material reality that really compel me to tell certain kinds of stories with my friends when it's like, okay, let's all get around and pretend to be space marines or whatever it is, right? Or anti-space marines. And so I think in a weird way, to me, it all makes sense, and it's all kind of one coherent project. It's just the game stuff is more fun, but in both sides of the coin, I'm writing about the future and telling stories about the future and the people who may inhabit it and what their kind of politics and culture may be like, what foods they might eat, all kinds of fun stuff. And it's been a real pleasure to work with a bunch of talented artists of different kinds, including like, you know, composers like Will Savino, obviously visual artists like Tony, my friend Ethan, who's done most of the art for Stillfleet, who's a good friend for years. And we've done all kinds of, we did a book about fake neuroscience called Suspicious Anatomy that was about an organ scientist just discovered behind your brain called the cranium, cranius. Cranium's a board game. And so that was very silly, but you know, you get the gist. It's super fun to kind of have, I think, the collaborative element where it's not just me writing like fiction and then sending it off and crossing my fingers. It's like someone has an idea, whether it's me or Tony or someone else, and we have to like make a fun experience out of it, whether it's a whole game or a module. So I really love that. I love kind of, you know, being challenged or editing other people's work, kind of working on a project that's bigger than your own ego, if that makes sense.
Huh. Yeah, that tracks. This is just something I've noticed. I looked up Amu when you mentioned it. You've got a very distinctive art style, man, with the pink and the yellow. Is there a reason you've like been drawn to that? It's really unique. It's cool to look at.
I don't know if I was drawn to it specifically. I know that if you were to go through... I only just recently leveled up beyond just posting to Instagram. So if you scroll back through the Odd Gob Games Instagram, you can see that at multiple points I was trying different like gradients and different like colorways. So there was a time where it was like a lot of greens, and then there was a period where I think I was playing Hades, like the roguelite, at the time. So there's like stuff where it has like neon like highlighter flourishes to it. I think I just kind of fall into like stylistic modes for a while, and over the past, I guess, year or two now, I've really hit a stride with this like colorway, and it honestly it makes the iterative aspect of game design that I enjoy really quick, because I maybe do it wrong, but I go art first and then I start doing all the writing. So if I can have what is essentially just a gradient overlay that lets me just make everything look pretty for me, I don't have to do all the fancy artsy color work. And people seem to enjoy it. I think it's nice and bold. It prints well, which also matters. So those like nice yellows and pinks and stuff tend to translate pretty well over into print. Moving forward, though, I am trying to force myself to kind of grow beyond just the gradients. As much as I like them, and they definitely have their place, I'm trying to work in some more full color work to kind of push the bounds of all of that.
Okay, so how did the idea then of Blister Critters come around then? What was the initial kind of almost conceptual birth of the idea? And how did you both then get onto this? Because obviously you're two both different companies originally. So what's the story behind that then?
Yeah, me and Wyatt have done work together for Stillfleet, so I was doing a handful of like aliens and some like space items and cool stuff like that. So I was aware of the Stillfleet's like grid system, and there was a morning where I was like just in the middle of procrastinating and not really doing the work I was supposed to and just kind of sketching. And I drew up like a mouse with like a Scrabble piece, like chest plate and holding like a needle, kind of Mouse Ritter-esque. But definitely in like my style. I threw it up on Instagram or Twitter, got a couple of thumbs up, and I was like, yep, now I'm gonna make a game. In terms of like tying it into, you know, Saturday morning cartoons and some of the more like darker elements to it, I'm already kind of I always lean into what I call like a whim dark style or tone, where it's, you know, whimsical and light and kind of goofy, but I really enjoy, which is where I go to Morkborg content for, is like the heavy metal Cthulhu and like gorier bits, which is a lot of what Amu is and was. So in having those illustrations, and I cranked a couple of them out, I don't even remember if I came to Wythe with anything written. I think it might have just been artwork and an idea. To kind of bring the project to life in a larger way than I would have been able to just like with on my own without like a team of like writers and people to help me really make the game substantial, especially using the grit system, which I really enjoy. I think melds right into how I wanted Blister Critters to kind of function. And yeah, I pitched Wythe on it, and he loved it, and here we are trying to etch it into history. So far, so good.
Yeah, and I mean, just from my standpoint, I mean, it fit so well because, you know, I mean, the reason I guess that the Stillfleet Studio is a company and not just Wythe makes games, and it's just a rebranding of my work, which is not like Tony, you're like, in a way, Odd Gob Games is just you, right? It's sort of reflective of whatever you're doing is Odd Gob Games.
Yep.
Our company is a slightly different, just because it's me and my friends Ethan, Steven, and Aaron, and my wife, and the five of us are, you know, leftists in New York City who Aaron's in Ithaca, but the New York City area, who love TTRPGs, and it's kind of a company about well, you know, how do games serve some sort of function to curate different kinds of conversations about the future and maybe what we should do or could do or how we could be, whatever. And it has to be fun first, of course. But is there some more thoughtful way to design games than just, you know, what I grew up with, which is you go bash goblins, you get XP, you get their gold. You know, everything you see, you slay it immediately, you take all their shit, you level up, and that's games. And, you know, obviously, like, if you believe something very different from that as a person, then playing games like that is just quite odd. So, you know, Stillfleet, for example, was my attempt over years with friends who wanted to play sci-fi games together to make a better game where, okay, we'll do a sci-fi game, and you'll still have cool powers, and we'll still roll dice and all that stuff, but, like, the thing you're doing is, if not overthrowing, you know, space capitalism, it's at least like carving out a niche for yourself or pushing back against, you know, horrible forms of exploitation, or, you know, trying to have some sort of change happen over time. And the whole game is about discovering, like, well, what could that be, while also occasionally, you know, bashing Space Cthulhu kind of monsters, right? Who are just somehow pure evil because, hey, that's fun sometimes, right? But the main thrust of the game is, okay, maybe there's something more interesting about culture that we can explore through pretending to be space marines, whatever. So Blister Critters is totally different, even though it uses the same system, but it's similar to me in that it brings this essential question of, like, all right, humans, we're all going to die because we've poisoned the earth, but animals are still going to be around, plants and all sorts of things. They're going to be different. So the whole mutant cartoon aspect to me, and Tony might feel very differently about his own game, but I read it as it's more metaphorical. It's like, yeah, they're mutants, but in some ways it's just, yeah, stuff has changed. We don't know how it's going to look in 100 years, 1,000 years, but life will still probably be around. Life's pretty tenacious. So, you know, what are fun stories in the shadow of humanity? How do you explore the ruins of all this human architecture, all this crap, every, like, plastic object around me, my phone, this water cup, whatever? And what would you do if you were suddenly sapient and before, you know, a few generations before you'd been just normal squirrels or crabs or whatever? So it's a wild concept. I don't think it's, like, realistic SF in that sense, but it still fits in that same, to me, thought space of, well, let's make a game that's both super, super fun, and you could kind of play in a purely escapist mode, but you can also use to have these conversations. And I've seen people at the table at conventions whom I never met before, sit down and play Blister Critters and say, okay, I want to be the chicken. So I'm going to be a chicken who's the boss, who shoots eggs out of my butt, basically, and it's a cartoon. But also, then they have real profound moments of, like, oh crap, we're in a supermarket and all the humans are dead and there's, like, rotting food. It's like there's this zombie apocalypse question of reckoning with the afterlife of all the things humans have done to Earth. And, you know, there's a lot of fun kind of Animal Farm stuff about just different kinds of animals, like, duking it out, you know, forming their own hierarchies or trying to live differently. Again, it gives you a chance to explore different kinds of social formations because you don't have to redo humanity. Maybe some animals want to do that. So I think it's a great game, and it really fits within our conception of, like, why we wanted to make games in the first place professionally and not just Wythe Vanity publishes a book, you know, releases some PDFs on itch. And, you know, it's been a pleasure to work with Tony and have this really collaborative process of, like, taking his idea, making it what he wanted, but also, yeah, seeing it mutate as other people get involved, and we play test it a lot. And sorry if any of that's too long. Just cut me off. I'll just keep talking.
Absolutely fine.
There's a bit of back and forth we always do between channels just to, like, sort out questions. Because at times, you guys answer about three or four in one go, and it's like, crap. Tick, nice. Tick, 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 tick.
yeah, so that seems like a really interesting way to look at games. And the concept is something I really do like. I'm a big fan of, I haven't read it in a while, I'm not up to date on it, but there's a webcomic called Scurry that plays with some of the same idea. It's mice that have suddenly become sentient in a post-nuclear war outskirts of a city where there's no humans left. So I really do like that kind of thing. I'm interested to get to playing Blister Critters and see how it runs. Is there any, hinted at as well, but is there any, like, lore bits that you want to share about Blister Critters? Like, do the animals potentially find out what happened to humanity, or is it left an open mystery?
No, so super intentionally, it's just called the Poof, capital P, Poof. the humans are gone. Depending on, like, the kind of game or the table that you're with, you might care more or less, and maybe there's an answer if that's what, like, the producer, the GM, wants there to be. But in the book outright, nope, humans are gone. You're a cockroach. You got cockroach problems. There's not like a step-by-step kind of, like, lore or clue guide to figuring out where or why the humans are gone. I think it's alluded to that it's some form of like ecological disaster, so it's the post-ecopocalypse. So something that the humans had a hand in screwing up climate-wise, almost certainly had a hand in it, but I like to, in my own headcanon, that's not canon or written in the books, I like to think that it's more eldritch or spooky rapture-esque, just because I think that's like fun. But no, in the book outright, there is no sanctioned lore so far as that goes. So a lot of what's been fun for Blister Critters, and something that me and Wyatt talked about kind of early on, is not necessarily setting up a setting outright. So much of the game is set in our world, so it is just I'm from Tallahassee, so it's just Tallahassee, but all the humans are gone, and that is kind of the setting, and the lore is what you make of it through play. So while there are a number of points throughout the book where we help guide along kind of building that stuff, the shtick of the game isn't necessarily it is very setting centric without being having a bunch of like bullet points that kind of tell you what the setting is. You know what the setting is. You've been to supermarkets, you've been to theme parks, or you've been, you know, X, Y, and Z, and that's kind of the most of the setup that we do. We let you lean into how cartoony or how post-apocalyptic you want to be with it thereafter, which I think is part of the fun and beauty that we've kind of really finally walked for Blister Critters, with offering just enough to get people like invested and to really homebrew their own stuff, which is a lot of the fun, but also, you know, letting you know it's just your world, it's just, you know, your backyard, it's just your office building.
Yeah. Cool. And I'll just add, there's also a fun lore thing that's discovered through plays, just as Tony's saying, with setting it in very specific locations. So I've, instead of like very cartoony, when I run the games, they tend to be set in actually kind of like post-apocalyptic Atlanta. Like, it's basically the same setting as The Walking Dead, but it's obviously very different. So there's no zombies, but hey, civilization's crumbled, sapient animals. And one of the fun things is seeing what players do with that. Like, how would group of animals, insert your imagined animal polity that emerges that you care about, take over a specific location that is a real location you've all been to. And often we'll change the name, it'll make fun of it. And, you know, that was like at a convention, I was running a game and didn't tell the players what it was, but they were breaking into the world of Coca-Cola, which is a museum Coca-Cola made in downtown Atlanta to itself. It's like a museum by a giant company they bring school kids to regularly on school trips, and you like drink like sugar water. It's crazy that it's real, but in my version of Blister Critters, it was sealed off. It was like a location where it hadn't been ruined because the doors, everything had been like hermetically sealed. So inside were mice from before the poof who didn't, like, they were just mice who'd just been living there, and all the other critters couldn't get in. And so you finally break in, and it's this treasure trove of basically sugar. But it was fun because the players didn't know anything about the world of Coca-Cola. So to them, it might as well have been like I was making up a D&D like dungeon. Because I was just saying crap, and they were like, that can't be real. And then they look it up, and it's like, no, he's like on the website just going through exhibitions at this stupid museum. They literally have like a polar bear, because, you know, the polar bear is like the symbol of Coca-Cola, which is really sad. It's like, we've destroyed a lot of land and done a lot of bad things, but hey, look at this endangered species. But so, you know, at the end, they're like, before the, they think it's like a giant beast, but it's a stuffed, it's a fake stuffed, you know, 12-foot tall polar bear. So anyway, I think some of that idea of lore is to, just what Tony said. It's like, you've all played games set in modern places. That is the setting. And because it's a cartoon, you can make it really weird. But I also think because it's after an apocalypse of some kind, you can lean into that and have this kind of haunted feeling. And it's really fun to have a game that's so quick to run that lets you kind of do both those things.
Fair play. Well, we opened this up to a couple of people beforehand, and we did get a couple of questions in. One of them was, if you took any inspiration from cartoons, which ones were they, with the art style looking so similar?
So I always cite, I don't think it looks like this, but I always cite SpongeBob as a formative cartoon in terms of just like the kind of weirdness that I like to bring to like running the game. Courage the Cowardly Dog is like specifically the kind of weird that I enjoy like messing with. Not even just in Blister Critters, but just in general. I think that's a really fun genre and like feeling to try and evoke in a game or like in a piece of artwork. Ed Nedi is similarly just like off the wall and just like anything kind of goes so long as it's funny, and not to pivot too hard, but that's like that's one of the distinctions in the book between like Zany and Gnarly running the game more like Ed, Edd n Eddy, or if you wanted to play more Gnarly, where I think Wise tendencies are like more like Watership Down, where it's a little bit more serious and kind of screwed up and dark, but it both work. So on my end, a lot of my influences are like early aughts, late 90s, like Ren and Stimpy, like off the wall cartoons. I can keep naming them, but I think the ones that I threw out there were the ones that I kind of keep coming back to is like, what are the ones I am actually pulling from?
I just have to add Ren and Stimpy, which I grew up with, and it was like my favorite like funny card. Like my favorite show is Aeon Flux, which is also animated, but it was not funny. But I think Ren and Stimpy in vibe is somewhat similar in a weird way. It's like kind of darker, but it's sort of similar to SpongeBob in that it's very surreal. And I think this game has a lot of that kind of influence in it.
Yeah, I really like is specifically pulling on the surreal, I think, is something that I really enjoyed teasing out of Blister Critters, of like pushing to the edges. How far in can we go with, like, somewhere in the book, I think it's literally written, like, if you want to swallow a fridge, like, you're playing a really zany game, but if you want to be a raccoon swallowing a fridge, I mean, I encourage you to do so. It's going to cost some grit. It's not going to be easy, but you can definitely do it. And I think that's fun. I think, yeah, just that. I think it's fun, period. And so it should be in the game.
I've just now got a weird image of, a fridge-shaped raccoon. That just doesn't look very comfortable.
Tiny little legs waddling around.
Well, we've used it as an interpretive mechanism too, like rolling for something where what's going to happen isn't you swallow a fridge, it's can you throw. So this was a recent playtest we did a live stream with our friend Jen and Chris, where we were like playing skee ball competitively against a giant alligator with a scorpion tail to see if his band of mice would let us use some of the power from their arcade for our burrow, which was low on power electricity. And so it was rolling, it was a competitive sports scenario. We weren't fighting, but it was like dire, you know, of importance. But like the roles were like about throwing a skee ball, but the interpretation got really zany. So, you know, there's a part when like somebody slips on a burrito and it goes down the neck of a weasel, and they're just like, they, you know, the mouth unhinges and they're just exactly burrito shaped, sort of what you're saying. And it doesn't break like the gameplay if you're used to like Merc Borg-esque, like, do I kill the skeleton or not? Like, it's the same thing. Like, you either threw the skee ball or you didn't, but you can interpret it in this. And everyone can. Everyone joins in pretty naturally because, again, we've all kind of seen cartoons. So I think it's fun the way that Tony's teased that out in the rules. And obviously the art, you know, helps a lot there too.
So I'm just getting the vibe here that this is very much not about trying to murder your way through everything. It's more on the option of just role play your way through it in other means. That you don't really see that in many books these days at all. I mean, there are a few, but not many, so that must have been quite a tricky one to come up with.
I don't know if it was even intentional. I think it's the way that the game flows. So I guess I would say it's intentional in that as we got further along, I definitely realized in running it more and more that I would go entire sessions, we didn't fight anything. And there's a really robust, like clean and quick combat system in the grit system. That works really well with Blister Critters, and we can get into how blisters work, but there are a lot of sessions that I've run where 95% of it, if not 100% of the session, we are just goofing around, swallowing fridges, throwing ski balls, like gaslighting frogs that we impaled with a crochet needle. You can just like word salad your way through an episode, and it is all of, but it, and it's not just like you're sitting down to role play. There are still rules involved. There's still roles. There's still dice included. So I've really enjoyed as a GM having that ability to have so much of the actual mechanics of the game be tied to, again, how well can I swallow the fridge? How far can my limb stretch across the room to grab this thing that I definitely can't grab? and mechanicalizing that has been fun as a tabletop creator, as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll just add, like, one something that Tony brought. So the grid system has, like, combat, and there's other kinds of roles. I mean, you have five dice, only one of them is combat. The other four, you know, are reason, will, charm, and movement, which is everything else bodily. But Tony specifically wanted to do rules for stuff, capital S, which would be anything kind of human-made, anything useful to a critter that they just would all sort of naturally conceive of as stuff. They wouldn't really typologize it the way humans would. It's just, you know, if you're a foot tall, you're like, can I hold this thing? Would it help me as a weapon, or as armor, or something, can I eat it? You know, that how animals kind of assess stuff. And that was interesting because we ended up creating rules around it. So it's not just like, okay, stuff has stuff points, meaning how big it is, how much, you know, inventory does it take. So it's a little like a mouse reader. You can only hold a couple objects because you're tiny. But also it can have a bonk rating, meaning it can add to damage or not if it's like a Q-tip. Not that helpful. But a pen, okay, yeah, a pen, you could help whack somebody. It can have damage reduction. So this is similar to like Stillfleet or something where you could have, you know, a space rifle. But what's interesting is then we could have powers where, like, you could get, you know, more stuff points or, like, find stuff more easily or find certain kinds of stuff. Or maybe you could eat food that other critters could need. And so it opened up a new avenue for the world of the game driving the things you do, not in terms of combat, but in terms of, like, just picking up and putting down human-made crap. And so I think, Tony, to your point, I mean, you can kind of play the game without ever fighting anything by just discovering and trying to assess, almost like, you know, you play Minecraft, it's like, it's not really a fighting game, but I mean, you are getting chased by zombies half the time, but it's not about that, right? It's about picking up and putting down crap in your, you know, in your castle or whatever. So I think Blister Critters has a fun sort of object focus, which again is great from like a deep, like, why is it about objects? Well, like, humans make a lot of weird objects, and it really gets you to think of differently about, I remember Tony's pitch, it was, I think you said, imagine running a game where you're only using objects on your own desk. Like, look at your desk mm-hmm. full of, like, you know, pens and sketchbooks and stuff, and it's like, what if those were being used as, like, implements in an RPG? And what if the book was to scale? So there's a lot of things drawn in the book at basically one-to-one scale, and I thought that was so brilliant. I mean, it was such an obvious idea, which, you know, again, okay, Mouse Reader kind of does that, but we wanted to really foreground that it's, like, 90s to today, like, it's modern, so it's not all, you know, medieval tropes, right?
Sounds good. You mentioned that there's different abilities and such that the creatures that you and your friends will be playing as can have. How do those work?
Yep, so that kind of taps into the other side of Blister Critters that isn't just cartoony, zany fun. The other half that is kind of leaning more into the ecological, mutate-y dark part, where post the poof, all of the animals and living things started to, like, mutating and developing blister critters. These blisters are a way in the book, specifically called blisters, that you as a player and the other beasts and baddies of the world pick up and develop different mutations, laser eyes. You can sometimes develop a secondary animal trait. Just like telekinesis and all kinds of like funky weird stuff the further down into advancement you go. But yeah, blisters are the main way that you kind of mutate through the world and level up on this big like skill tree, the big blister tree that we put together as well.
Hmm. So at what point did you start playtesting this and how did that then come involved with the blisters?
I think the blisters probably took a playtest or two, but they were pretty early on because it was in the base artwork. So the initial sketch that I had was a blistered, mutated like mouse. So from the jump, these things are going to mutate and it's going to be kind of funky and it's going to have to walk this tightrope of being cute and zany and fun, but also having, I guess you would call it somewhat like body horror-esque, or at the very least it's creepy. So the blisters were pretty early on. Shifting them into being the actual powers probably came about when I was taking rules from Stillfleet and figuring out how I wanted to adjust them and tweak them into, so like in Stillfleet they're all like powers, and in Blister Critters they're still like called powers, but they're blisters in terms of you gaining a blister, you gain a level in that sense.
Yeah, and we did start playtest. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go on. I was just seeing you.
I mean, we just started playtesting last fall. So Tony was working on the game late summer, right? On.
Yep.
So by the fall, you know, one goal is we set was okay. Can we get a quick start so we could like try it out with other people? So I think Tony, you have your group of friends. So you're playing with your friends basically in Florida, and then we have a group up here, and we started. We brought it to a couple conventions. So we went to PAX Unplugged in Philly. Which is pretty big, and we played it sort of continuously for 3 days straight, and people really loved it, and they really got it, and that was we printed it the night before, so it's like my wife and I rushing to this like local print shop and getting these nice just normal paper, but you know, color 20 page, you know, booklets with Tony's art and with the base rules, and basically handing those out at a con, and it went really well. People got it, and that was obviously a good sign, but also it helped us because people asked clarifying questions and we could kind of discuss, okay, is there anything that needs tweaking? We made some changes, but I mean, honestly, the core ideas are all there, and it was more figuring out the exact, you know, okay, what are all the powers, you know, because the quick start also, we'd pick stuff we felt was further along and better for to play. Now I think we're actually editing, you know, finishing editing the book, and it's really nice. It's in a good place. So it's, we've played it a lot since then, but I'd say, you know, it's really been a fast process, really. It's like the fall to now, from idea to like a thing.
Yeah, we definitely fast tracked. Most of the project has been, on a speedier track than I think a lot of projects, of this size. It's not the largest game in the world, but I think with all the components in the box and, the amount of like how dense the book is, it's not like overly crunchy, but I think there's just a lot of good like material and content and replayability that you can get out of the 100 or so pages we're going to be able to squeeze in there. That
yeah, there's 66 animals. There's tons of animals, and we had a friend 66. In New Zealand. There's 66 animals, and there's a friend in New Zealand, friend in Australia, who were like, "You missed all the animals." Like, you didn't do it, our animals, you know, so they're writing, like, a whole nother book that's, like, the Down Under version. So, that just tells us that it has legs, right? People come up with their own ideas constantly, which is great. That was the goal, is make up your own animals, make up your own stuff, you know.
Which is actually a huge portion of the game, is people making up their own stuff. Not from a sense of, like, I don't want to write it. I could, but... in terms of like, you should write like for what your small town looks like in Blister Critters, and you can play, you can go to your gas station down the road, you can go to your specific Walmart or whatever, like weird like Piggly Wiggly or whatever silly thing yours is called, you can go there and play a game in there, and you can look up online and grab the map layout and run your critters through, and there's just like in the book, it's like explicitly written for people to kind of like dive in deep on like a homebrewed player focused content creation that we enjoy doing, and we have a number of different zines and like side products that we're already putting together that are specific, like this is what this arcade looks like, this is what this little bar looks like, but I think a lot of the fun, especially running it myself, is picking up locations that are either local or, you know, traveling essentially in Blister Critters to play elsewhere is also a lot of fun.
So just quickly, how much then content wise of a campaign, as it were, is going to be in the finished products? You say you've done a few bits and pieces, but you've also said that a lot of it is also up to individual, which is quite great because it means obviously people get to create their own adventures and stuff. But how much is there going to be in the book?
In the book outright, there is a pilot episode. So leaning into the literal TV show nature, there's a lot of terms in the game that are based around that. There's a pilot episode at the back of the book, which is like a session or two. And then Blister Critters itself is divided up into seasons. So like where you would play a campaign, Blister Critters, you play out a season, and at the start of it you kind of decide how many episodes you're going to want to play. So if you want to play a long season, you'd play like 10 episodes, every episode you level up, and then so by the end of it you're level 10, that's kind of the cap. You either retire your character, they become a beast, or there's like legacy rules as well to pass on traits and information. To be super direct with your question, in the book itself there is a pilot episode that'll get you through a good episode or two, Three, if your players take a long time like mine do to get through, to get out of the bathroom, it'll take you a little while. But in the book itself, there's like an episode or two's worth. And then we're also actually running a game jam right now, the Critter City Crawl on Itch, for people to build up a really small location. I just saw one today that was like a really cool bar that had like ingredients and stuff for like mixing specific drinks for powers and stuff. So if anybody is listening is interested, while the campaign is still running, there's a game jam running for you to kind of devise some cool plot hooks and encounters and stuff for your own episodes, your own sessions on Itch.
Yeah. And we're going to take, so Tony and I are judging that is just judged by, like, you know, what is cool. But we'll take five. We might do more than that. I mean, honestly, if they're good. And we'll put them in a PDF. And so we'll release that as, like, this is modeling, just to shout out, you know, Tomb of a Thousand Doors, which Matt, you know, Manadon and some of the Mouse Raider community had put together, where they had a lot of Mouse Raider content coming together, made a big cool PDF. And then eventually they just did a successful major, you know, Kickstarter to print it as a nice book. So for this, you know, we're not looking at print right now. We're just saying, okay, you know, we'll do the Critter City Crawl, find some locations that other people have put together, and we'll release it as a PDF. Here's all these cool locations with plot hooks. And, you know, then you have those plus the starter episode. And those are free, right? So we're hoping that that's at least enough to give people the sense of the kinds of stories they can tell. Plus, we're hoping through, like, actual play, right, that there's going to be some examples where they're seeing, oh, okay, I get it, you know, if they're interested. And then in the future, we're hoping we can do more stuff by Tony, in addition to others. I mean, like, say, we do have this Australia-New Zealand supplement possibly coming out in the near future, which would be really, I don't think Tony or I know what it's going to be, but it'll be fun. It'll have locations there. It's going to be great. Yeah, it's going to be fun.
So it sounds like there's a lot of really neat stuff in the game. Is there anything that you guys had to cut for either practical reasons or time or whatever? Or just not thinking it would fit, that you really liked and would like to rework at some point?
Or
do you just feel bad about cutting?
I know that one thing that was a much larger portion of the Blister Critters idea and concept early on was like the sun and the moon and like a day-night cycle that I was really passionate about and was really tied to. But I think the longer that we went on with the project, the less it made sense for as integral as it was. It's still there, but much more stripped back to make way for how full the game is otherwise, which is something I talk about all the time, is how full the game feels. It feels so well-rounded and like all of the bits are there. So when we were trying with all of the other stuff written to get this like day-night cycle that added like a lot of extra like rules and stuff on top, it felt like it was a bit too much. I still really enjoy the artwork, which is why I think I'm as tied to it as I am and was. All the artwork is still there. It's been stripped back to a degree that feels right for the state of Blister Cruisers as is. But if I had to pick a thing that I wish found a better home, or might find a better home in a different idea, a different concept, it would be the kind of weird eldritch day-night cycle that I had crafted at the kind of birth of Blister Cruisers.
Yeah, and that's still in there as essentially it's an optional rule, which streamlined is just, you know, it buffs hostiles, it buffs bad guys at certain times of the day, because whether it's an Eldritch interpretation, they're getting kind of radiation charge like Dragon Ball Z villain style, or whether it's like the likelihood you encounter a big badass beast is just greater because of, you know, biology at certain times of the day. There's kind of more danger at different times of the day than others, and that feels like it works with Eldritch. It feels like it works with kind of like how would animals really be, and it's pretty light, where you can either forget about it, ignore it, or you can say, okay, this session, you know, you guys got to make some choices, because if you choose to move now versus later, you know, that, you know, basically if you wait around here there might be an encounter, but if you move now an encounter might be worse for you. So it adds kind of a little bit of strategic thinking, kind of like a hex crawl rule. In terms of some other stuff, I mean, I think, Tony, you have so many good ideas, so I'm glad. I mean, most of it worked out really well, as you say, to make a rounded game. Like, the legacy rules, I think, are awesome and really add a lot. which was neat and not something I'd thought of when you said, you know, mutant cartoon animals is like, well, they're never coming back, right? But the legacy rules are really fun. The idea of being a burrow, like a group of critters, is fun. But yeah, I think there's just so many, I think in like coming up with the animals, right? There's so many that we just had to stop at some point because there's just too many cool animals IRL. So obviously you could do a lot with that in the sort of cartoon game environment. So I think that's why we realized, aha, that's, we want to turn that out onto the audience and hopefully get people playing the game and then they'll make their own, you know, settings, animals, whatever, because it would be stupid to try to do this exhaustive, like, here's all 4,000 character classes, you know, like nobody wants that.
Yeah. Cause each animal adds like, however many different variations for any given critter. So every animal, every critter that you can play as, gives you usually two unique powers. Most animals in the game come with their own unique set of powers. So there's over like 100 unique powers solely in what kind of animal you're playing. That's before you develop blisters. That's before you decide your role in your party, in your pack. And so that was one of the things. I agree. That was one of the things where we could have gone on forever, where it's like, yeah, it's 100, 150 animals. you can just go on forever. Same thing with the amount of stuff that's in the actual book. So like in the book, we were talking about stuff earlier. There's a catalog in the like the stuff chapter, essentially. That catalogs like 200 different unique kinds of things. So you just be in the bathroom and you can come up with 50 if you dig around long enough. So at a certain point, like we can't have 300 pages full of stuff, and a large portion of the game is encouraging people to make up their own stuff and to, you know, look around and use that thing as a mace or use that thing as a piece of armor. To piggyback off what Wyth was initially saying, I think that if we could dive deeper into burrow rules, that might be fun for a future supplement to offer some more like home-based building, which is like encouraged, I think, narratively, but currently isn't entirely mechanicalized, which is how I would run it. But I think it would be fun to flesh those out in a way where you can, over time, maybe even over multiple seasons and multiple critters, really have a burrow kind of flourish and go through seasons of, you know, hardship and success.
Yeah, the dwarf fortress / quiet year version of Blister Critters. I mean, even just to name two ideas, just quickly that Tony, you wanted to do and we may do in the near future, but we're not doing now with the Kickstarter just because, oh my God, it's so hard to get one book done well. But is the rules for playing as stuff, as blistered stuff, so stuff that comes to life. So, you know, you can imagine like Toy Story, but like gross. Also the idea of playing as motile, like somehow they can move around, plants and mushrooms. So I think those are two categories of rules that Tony started working on. And at the end of the day, so to really answer your question, we didn't put in the book, even though they're cool. We just, hey, we wanted to keep it 100 pages, keep it really approachable, pretty simple. You're an animal, walk around, do stuff. Plenty of other things that we'll get to. I don't know.
So I'm aware of the time here, but something copped up while I was whilst you were talking. This, how do you think this would work then, compared to an actual tabletop to a virtual tabletop? How do you think they would suit either category then?
We've run a number of games digitally, and they go great. I think something that Blister Critters really has going for it is how like approachable and quickly understood it is. I think like in concept it might be a little tricky to explain like in five words, but like when you sit down at the table and within a minute of playing, it's like it just kind of clicks for everybody, strangers and friends alike. It doesn't take a whole lot of explaining afterwards. So especially when you kind of have that like digital wall in front of you, having something that doesn't take a whole lot of explanation and that everyone can kind of get on board with. Oh, I've watched SpongeBob. Oh, I've watched Ren and Stimpy. I get to do that thing. It translates really well. There's actually stuff in the rules that encourage people to do like digital map making, and something that I like doing with my table in person and online is to do like live, I'm an illustrator, like live illustrations of like kind of wacky stuff that's going on, or I'll hand them the pen and let them draw the layout of like the abandoned toy store that we're in. And there's plenty of websites, and I know the different VTTs offer some sort of like collaborative drawing or moving around of tokens. So all of that is kind of really nicely built into the more, I think, collaborative side that Blister Critters brings out in a tabletop game, where it's not just guy at the table with a screen, three people kind of asking questions. For me, it's always really, really collaborative, and written into the rules is intended to be something that is like a fun project, essentially. You get to make a cartoon episode with your friends that happens to have rules on top of it.
Yeah, we all know more about our own modern edifices than we do about medieval thatch roof farm huts or whatever, you know, so I think it translates better than the classic Dragon game if you really think about, you know, if you had to draw a room at a pharmacy or a daycare, you know, you could probably do it better than you could actually imagine what like a baronial manse looked like. So, you know, I think it's the same as any RPG. You can do them on Theater of the Mind. You can do them gridded out with maps. And yeah, Tony had some great ideas for sort of encouraging people to work together to imagine what the critters kind of experience at that scale is like without necessarily having to go full VTT, but obviously you could. So.
Okay. So what for each of you, what was the best thing and the worst thing about making the game? The high and the low.
Spicy.
Let's see. We're still kind of in the thick of finishing up some of the writing. I don't want to do like the job interview thing of like, what's my worst quality? I work too hard. But I do think that something that I really had to overcome is a strong word, but like grapple with is this is like the largest project that I've worked on. Not even just in terms of the amount of artwork needed, which there is still a lot of, and I'm working every day to kind of knock away at. But it's just a lot more writing than I anticipated when I set out to make it prior to kind of bringing it to life. But the scope sounds silly to say that's the worst part of it, because I'm really happy with the size of it. I think it's really, really well put together. I think it's sturdy. But at the outset, I was definitely kind of overwhelmed, and at times still am, with kind of how big it grew. For the better, but is much larger than... It's the biggest project I've worked on to date, so there's a certain amount of stress that comes with that. The best bits have been, I think, some of the live stream actual plays and, like, getting to run it for strangers and have it go well. To have, you know, to have strangers be invested in, to have a really nice time. Seeing extra content creation from people that I don't know. Like the people, the group that's making the Australian, like Aussie version of Blister Critters, and seeing some of the entries for the game jam. Again, a big intention for Blister Critters is for it to be like player forward. So like for people to make their own stuff, not because we can't and we like doing it, but as a GM and as a person that enjoys other games, I really, really relish and homebrewing my own stuff. So having that be a part of Blister Critters and people actually engaging in that is really fulfilling as a creator.
Yeah, I'll try to be really quick, but I mean, for me, the hard part, the downside is just like, oh man, the running a small business in a world where that's not, you know, that's not what you're supposed to do, right? You're supposed to be one of five giant companies that owns everything, and it's, you know, so it's really hard to, it's like, I want to, even, it's weird, because even more than with Stillfleet, it's like, I want to do Tony's book justice, you know what I mean? Like, I don't, it's not about me as much as like, oh, damn, now I feel like I want, you know, my friend to succeed. So, I think we've worked really hard on it, and I think we've learned a lot, but at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, printing is expensive. How do you reach people? Everyone's making it games now, which is great and fun, but how do you have then the ability to have a sustained development cycle for products that are really high quality, that are really, really fun, that are well play tested, they're like copy edited, there's not typos, you know, the printing's good, the colors are saturated, you know, all the stuff that I think as like art book nerds we really want. So that's just tough to like constantly go back to, like, okay, what do we really want to, at the end of the day, do make these little decisions around what's in the box, right? It's a box set. So it's the book, there's a map, there's cards, there's all this stuff. And Tony had a lot of great ideas, and we could have done millions of objects, but then again, it's like, okay, then the thing's $100 and no one buys it. So that stuff's tricky. The fun part, yeah, is definitely to, I agree with Tony. It's seeing not just when we have fun, because I feel like, hey, I always love GMing. I could GM any game. It'd probably be fun for me. I enjoy it. But seeing other people run it and get into the characters and just come up with all kinds of wacky ideas, including, yeah, people who've never played before. I played with some friends who'd never played RPGs, and they loved it. I mean, they got it right away. And so that was definitely for me a moment of like, all right, this works, you know.
Fair play. Well, I suppose we should wrap this up. Where can people find you at the current moment? What's your handles, your tags, whatever you want to call them? Where are you guys?
Yeah, I am on both Twitter and Instagram at @oddgobgames. I guess really the only place that I'm at. I post there constantly about Blister Critters currently, but I also do a bunch of other work. I have like a zombie Morkborg hack that I'm putting together and putting out at the current moment. Post Blister Critters will be back and posting weird stuff on my itch page, oddgobgames.itch.io. I really just want to direct people to the Kickstarter. Only has a couple days left as of recording. So if you go to blistercritters.com, you can, you know, back the project, grab a box set, grab the book, get them while they're hot, and help us out. If you were interested in anything we kind of blabbed about, I'd love to have you over there.
Yep. Yeah. Same. I mean, blistercritters.com takes you to the Kickstarter, and it'll after that take you to probably the backer kit store. But you know, it's gonna only be available at that price now. So in the future, you'll probably be able to find it, but we're gonna have to charge more because it'll go through a distributor, not arbitrarily, but for good reasons. You can find everything about Stillfleet at stillfleet.com, and we're everywhere at Stillfleet. So in social media, just put in Stillfleet, you'll find us. And yeah, we have other games coming out that we're working on and we're really proud of, but they're not done. So basically right now you can buy the sci-fi game or you can buy Blister Critters, and Blister Critters is super, super fun. So go to blistercritters.com.
Well, thank you very much, both of you, for your time. It has been an absolute pleasure talking with you. There's probably 1,000 more questions we could have asked about all sorts of different things for one podcast. I know you have one. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you want to plug that quickly?
Oh, sure. No, just we do a podcast called Why We Roll, which I do with my friend Chris Pickett, who's working on a grid system game called Danse Macabre. And they're a really smart game designer, writer, illustrator. And we talk. It's like car talk. It's very silly and informal. But in the way the car talk is like very specific about cars, it's the same thing with the RPGs. We interview designers and just go really nerd out about game design.
Fair play. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. And yeah, go and back Blister Critters. It should be still up by the time this comes out, hopefully, unless I fail on editing this. We'll see. Yeah, good luck to the both of you, and yes, everyone from A Pint of Cthulhu signing off. Goodbye.
Boy.
Thank you. Get Blister Critters, the new game by Stillfleet, which also is sort of the entity making Why We Roll. Blister Critters is super fun. It's by Tony Grasso, who's an amazing artist. He did some art for Stillfleet. It uses the same system, the grid system. But in this case, you are playing as mutant cartoon animals. We're funding now on Kickstarter. Honestly, we really could use your support. We just want to add more and more cool stuff in the boxed set for the game. You can also get the book on its own. The rules are really simple. There's a free quick start if you're interested. You want to see, I don't know, what do they mean by playing as a mutant cartoon animal? How would that even work? Well, check it out. Blistercritters.com. More information there. Thank you. Bye-bye.